This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Uncommon Energy Podcast. My name is Trainer Chip Ritchie, joined here as always by my friend and co-host Azul GG. What's going on, Azul? How's it going? Heard you had a big tournament this weekend, yeah?
Not a huge tournament. Did win a 1K tournament. Played Mew VMAX. So went with the good old tried and true. I guess I haven't had the results behind my play with it, but it's the deck.
Yeah,
I
can you call it the tried and true?
Yeah, that's true.
Hey, listen, he's not washed, everyone. Let's give Azul a round of applause. Winning a tournament once again, making money from Pokemon. Things are right in the Pokemon world once again. Congratulations, buddy.
Thank you. Yeah, I decided to just play Mew because it was kind of one of those situations where it's like, best deck from last format is usually pretty good in the early tournaments of a new format. Yes. People are less worried about the deck, and everyone's deck is literally or generally just bad or worse, right? Like, everyone's trying out new stuff, trying out new things. Nothing's optimized, but Mew didn't really change a whole ton from one format to the other, so just went with Mew and ended up winning the tournament, so that was cool. We are also a day late. Apologize for that. I was having some computer issues over the weekend that I finally got fixed today. So that's one of the reasons we are delayed. But my computer is back up and running as it should be. The cooler or whatever, the water pump cooler for my CPU was broken. So troubleshoot a couple things, got to that part where I tested out a different cooler, and now it's up and cooling again. So that's my weekend. Chip, how was yours?
It was pretty good. I was home for the first time in a couple weekends, which was pretty nice to just like relax for once, just kind of hang out and take care of some house stuff. Caught up on some TV. There's a lot of great TV shows and things out right now. I've caught up on the Kenobi show, which is pretty decent. It's okay. It's not my favorite of the Star Wars projects recently, but it's still okay. I watched all of part one of season four of Stranger Things, which is awesome. That is probably my favorite modern TV show, like, I guess TV show, like, within the last, I don't know, what do you want to say, like 10 years or so, something like that. Yeah, Breaking Bad is probably good. Still number one as far as modern TV goes, but Stranger Things is pretty dang good.
Yeah.
So I caught up on that. I started watching The Boys today. I watched episode one this evening of season three. And it's, I don't know. Do you watch The Boys, Azul? We talked about the other two. Yeah, it was a lot. Even for The Boys, it was a lot. Very graphic TV show. Not for the faint of heart, to say the least. So it was, but yeah, it's good. There's a lot of good TV on right now. Caught up on all that. And there was a lot of Pokemon this past weekend as well, which is one of the things we will be talking about on this episode. The final tournaments of the Brilliant Stars format happened, both Milan, the special event there, and the Santiago regionals down in Chile. Completed this weekend, putting a bookend on the Brilliant Stars format. So we'll talk about exactly what happened there. Any surprises, anything that was expected? We didn't really talk about Milan on last week's episode, so apologies for that. I don't think it was really on either of our radars. We were both, you know, thinking of the regionals, but there was a special event as well.
Yeah.
And then we'll move on from there, talk a little bit about some of our favorite decks from Astral Radiance so far, not necessarily the top tier stuff you hear and a lot of people talk about, namely Palkia, just kind of some of our personal favorites. We'll, of course, do Guess That Flavor Text. And then we have our first regional championships this weekend in the new Astral Radiance format, which will be taking place down under in Melbourne, Australia. Super excited to see what the results of that event look like, because you can only gather so much info from online events, I feel like. It really does. Yeah. IRL play is a big difference, I think, for sure. So I'm looking forward to seeing what the results look like from that event and which one of our Aussie friends will come out on top at that event. So you ready, Azul? Ready to hop into it?
Yeah, let's get into it. So, I mean, the first thing we're going to talk about is the the results, the final events from the, not Astral Radiance, what am I thinking of?
Brilliant Stars.
Yeah. The final events from the Brilliant Stars format, and it went down. I don't think there was anything too crazy in either event. I think maybe the craziest thing was that there was a decent amount of Ice Rider doing well at Santiago. There was two Ice Riders in top eight, which we've been talking about a little bit, and the format had just been steadily shifting more and more into Ice Rider's favor, right? And of course, the Mew matchup, still a pretty tough matchup, and the Ice Rider did end up losing to the finals to a Mew in the at Santiago Rios to Andreas Gajardo.
Yeah,
I think I'm pronouncing that right. So yeah, we saw that. I guess Joao also played Inteleon VMAX. That was also another top eight finisher. The Inteleon VMAX, another deck that the meta has, like, as the meta shifts more favorable for Ice Riders, kind of the same thing for Inteleon. Like, both decks just don't want to really play up against Mew too much. So the more Arceus there is, the better for both the decks. And we saw Joao, great player, taking a top eight placement there with the Inteleon. So it's cool to see Inteleon get in there as well.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's definitely kind of become the story of the Brilliant Stars format as it has gone on. At the beginning, there's a lot of these decks that you couldn't really play because they just took such a bad matchup to Mew VMAX. But as Mew VMAX has become a smaller and smaller percentage of the meta, these decks have been able to creep back in. You can take your kind of unfavorable matchup to the Mew deck, but if you're beating the Arceus decks pretty consistently, you're pretty okay with that at this point in the meta. So let's start by breaking down Milan and the tournament there, which was won by Tord Reklev, the living legend of the Pokemon TCG, the guy who many consider to be the best to ever play the game, winning another major just a weekend after coming in second place in Vancouver, playing the same deck, Rapid Strike, Urshifu, VMAX, which I don't think anyone at this point should be surprised that this is the deck that Tord has stuck with throughout this format. He's done very well with it, and I feel like that's kind of how Tord leans into what he chooses for a format. Like, he like picks a deck for a format and tweaks it and refines it for certain expected metas, but like that's kind of the deck he usually sticks with throughout the format, I feel like.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's been different in the past, but like I feel like, yeah, generally sometimes we see him kind of stick to one deck if there is the possibility to. And if you do think you are just playing a very powerful deck that can continue in the meta, tweaking it and becoming better at it is always an advantage, especially if you don't think anyone's going to hard counter it. And I think we've seen the metas already kind of come and go where people were really hard countering Urshifu VMAX, and even then Tord kind of played it through those and it didn't even seem like it was, you know, that big of a hard counter. We did see the adjustment that Tord made of adding the Celebi, Amazing Rare Celebi, to the list to have a better answer to the Hoopa V. And of course it also is just kind of a solid two hitter, you know, one grass energy, it's just 30 for each energy on your opponent's active Pokemon. So even if you go up against an Arceus, you can still hit it for like 90 and stuff. So you can still set up some two hit KOs. But yeah, with a choice belt, it won a KOs Hoopa, or you could hit Hoopa for like 180 and then set up some kind of two shot or even into a Yoga Loop play or something like that. So it's like a solid answer for the answers that people bring to the Urshifu matchup. Also, like, I mean, I guess like Galarian Moltres is weak to grass as well. So if you can do some back and forth Galarian Moltres war prize trade, then you got the Celebi on your side to help you out with that. So
yeah, you can even hit something like a Malamar VMAX for weakness. You can hit it really hard for just one energy, which in a matchup like that where they're really limiting your plays every turn after they're attacking, you want a energy-efficient attacker. One energy Celebi is pretty nice in a instance like that. But yeah, when we recorded last week's podcast, I had not yet watched the finals of Vancouver because I was casting the Full Grip tournament at the same time that Vancouver was happening. So I had not watched the finals of that event yet. But I, since then, have gone back and watched the finals. And man, it was just kind of a bloodbath. The Hoopa V just kind of ran through Tord, and the Tord definitely compensated for that here at this event with the Celebi, which I definitely think, as we put an end on this format, Celebi probably just a mainstay. It should be a mainstay inclusion in the Rapid Strike Urshifu decks.
Yeah, definitely. I think seemed at the end of it. And that's actually something that the Bradner and crew played at New Jersey, I believe.
Did, yeah.
And I think even before that, I think the credit for the initial idea of the tech goes to Noel, who played it in Indiana regionals.
That's where I saw it first as well.
Yeah. So I think, yeah, the first person I know of who played the Celebi in the Urshifu deck is Noel playing it in Indiana, I think. as far as I know. So, and it maybe did come in clutch for Tord, because Tord did play up against that Malamar VMAX in the finals. So I think Tord actually even tweeted out that Selby took the final prize card for him in the finals up against Tamau with the Arceus Malamar VMAX with no Baby Jolteon, which is very interesting. I think Baby Jolteon very strong right now, but decided to just go a little bit more aggressive as far as disruption go, and included Crushing Hammers and Fan of Waves. No Baby Jolteon in there, though, which probably would have been a little bit tougher for Tord to deal with. Now that you have the Celebi in there, energy in play isn't as important. Jolteon stopping the Shady Dealings definitely would have been a little bit scarier. So this time playing up against a Dark Attacker that, you know, without the... not quite as scary. Not 1-hit KO-ing your Urshifus with the Malamar.
Yeah, I feel like this version of the deck is maybe slightly more consistent than something that's trying to cram Jolteon in there. Your bench space gets really awkward with Jolteon, and you don't have room to play things down like Lumineon V, like Crobat V all the time, because you're trying to set up your Beavrails, trying to set up the Jolteons, all that stuff. You got your Arceus, your Malamars, all of those things. So, yeah, really interesting deck building decision from Tamau. It's kind of like he took the Arceus Malamar deck that was already pretty popular, and then Parker Lish's winning Vancouver list, and took like the favorite parts of both of them and kind of crammed them together. And it's like, yeah, Crushing Hammers are just pretty good. So yeah, congratulations to Tamau on a second place finish. Crushing Hammer Arceus getting first last weekend and then second place this past weekend. Not the best sign for a format, I feel like, whenever we're moving towards people just throwing the hammers into their deck. But we haven't seen much of that yet from Astral Radiant, so I think we'll be safe, at least for now.
Yeah, from too many hammers coming out. I guess the other thing that actually stood out to me as I looked at this, because I didn't actually look at the full top 32 yet, I only looked at the top 8. There was 3 Arceus Charizards in day 2 of Milan, which is, I mean, that's something for sure. We had been seeing a little bit of Charizard leading up to this last weekend, and none of them are doing too hot. James did have the winning in at New Jersey Regionals, but now we're seeing quite a bit more of it, actually. And this, I think James is probably the only person in day 2 with the Charizard, but now we see 3 of them in a day 2 of just 32 people making it. None of them doing too well. It didn't look like any of them were too close to a potential top 8. But yeah, still interesting to see that much Arceus Charizard making its way. Actually, like, there's just not that much Inteleon in the day 2 of this event. Like, way less than I would have expected. I guess there's a lot of Urshifu Inteleon, but in general, not a ton of Urshifu Inteleon.
Yeah, there's like some of the Arceus Gyarados decks with some more Arceus Malamars. Arceus Charizard taking 3 spots, definitely a little surprising. I do think that that is once again just a sign of the format developing in a way where there is just less Mew VMAX. If we look at this, it looks like there's like 6 Mew VMAX in day 2, but 5 of the 6 did make the top 16. So Mew did pretty well at this event. And Charizard, I don't think, does the best against Mew VMAX, but it is actually pretty good against all the Arceus decks, as you can 1-hit KO opposing Arceus V-Stars with a 330 HP Pokemon that they can't deal with.
Yeah, you can even like 1-hit KO Urshifus too. You get to 330. If you don't put a DTE on it, you can do the 330 with the Choice Belt and 5 Fire Energy, which seems like a lot, but Magma Basin plus the Trinity Nova to accelerate energy into play, it's not that hard to get to a 5 Energy Charizard.
Yeah, you also have the time to do it in that matchup, because they're not going to be threatening 1-hit knockouts on your Charizards at any point, really.
Yep.
They can soften them up, sure, with a G-Max Rapid Flow, but then you're losing a bunch of energies to go after a G-Max Rapid Flow just to deal 120 to a benched VMAX. It doesn't feel great necessarily, so you can really threaten that 1-hit knockout on the VMAX, but then it almost becomes a like cat and mouse game of like who goes in with the VMAX first, right?
It probably just comes down to whoever finds boss first, which generally favors the Shady Dealings deck.
This
I guess
is true. Yes,
you can even start to do some punches with like Hoopas or whatever, with the baby Hoopa just hit for 90 or something.
But then we have 2 Mews in the top 4 by Jack Old and Ryan Morehouse. I don't think I remember seeing anything spicy in any of these lists. Oh, yeah, the Deoxys from Jack was playing the Tower of Darkness, which is a solid stadium choice that a lot of people have gone with in their Mews. I still kind of prefer the Rose Tower personally. It's just bailed me out too many times when I've been playing Mew, where I open with the Tower and then I Tower for 1 and get the Battle VIP Pass, and it's like, okay, we're cooking. Tower of Darkness just doesn't have the same oomph to it. But the Deoxys is honestly pretty cool. It is a Fusion Strike, Single Strike, and Rapid Strike Pokemon, so at worst, you can just discard it to draw cards with the Tower of Darkness. But also Photon Boost can deal really solid damage, and it works with double turbo energy. So you can just slap a DTE, Alessa's Sparkle onto it, and you are hitting for 140 damage times 2 weakness, dealing 280. So you can knock out, you know, Urshifus. You can do a lot with it. You know, basic Urshifus, I should say. And yeah. it's just a solid, you know, with all of the damage buffs and stuff, this is a pretty reasonable way to a decent option besides Meloetta to get off a turn one attack for a lot of damage, right?
Yeah, yeah. For the turn one attack, it's actually kind of cool because you can, like, you know, yeah, you get some tablets involved or a choice spell, and you can, like, be one KOing V Pokemon turn one, like, not too unreasonably, to be honest. Like, you just need what? Minus 20, so you need triple modifier, which, like, isn't too hard to get. And it allows you to utilize that DTE that's potentially in your hand sometimes, where you just, like, don't want to put a DTE on a Meloetta or whatever, and then you can do that instead. Actually, one thing that I kind of, like, I looked at, like, a lot of the results of, like, the European regionals, and of course I'm always paying a little bit more attention to the American regionals because I'm usually there. But one thing, like, I like we've talked about a couple times, where we feel like there's not too big of a difference between the metas between Europe and America. But one thing that I did notice that's pretty consistent across the board, not 100%, but Americans definitely like Pokemon Catcher and their Mews way more than Europeans do, like a lot more. And there's a couple players in day two of Milan with catchers. There's two of them, I believe, but it's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So it's 2 of 4. But if you go over to America, it's like flip flopped. It'd be like 4 people with catchers, 2 people without catchers in their Mew. So
sure.
I thought that was interesting because, I mean, we've brought it up a couple times. Like, is there really a difference between the meta in, you know, America or Australia or Europe or Latin America? And generally it feels like there's not too big of a difference, but that is one thing that I kind of noticed. The Europeans not as fond of the catchers in general, it seems like.
Also got to give credit as well to Ryan, who also got top 4, who did as well play the Deoxys. So that is definitely interesting to see. It looks like Jake Walvin, who got 20th place at Bremen, was playing this deck as well with the Deoxys in it, which is really interesting. And I wonder if that's something that we could see carry over to this format. People who are choosing the Tower of Darkness route, do they go with the Deoxys as an inclusion? And I don't hate it, honestly. I don't hate it at all.
Yeah, it has an interesting qualities to it. It doesn't seem like it's like huge and game changing, but
definitely not
another attacking option as a one prizer can be nice, especially when you want to use like 3 1 prizers in a row or something like that. Like, that makes it a little bit easier to use 3 1 prizers, because now you can go like Meloetta, and then into the Deoxys or something like that. And then you don't need as many Fusion Strike energy. I guess you like that second Meloetta attacking is still going to be awkward, but more Psychic Leap options as well. So yeah, definitely interesting. And then Santiago Regionals, like we mentioned, or talked a little bit about the final placements. A lot more Arceus in this one, though.
Yeah, before we get into Santiago, there's one more thing I definitely want to talk about in Milan, which was kind of one of the more spicy things on the weekend as far as a card inclusion in a top 8 deck, and that is the Grand Bull V included in the top 8 Arceus deck from Ethel Arkey. So congratulations to them on making top 8 with the Grand Bull. And that's actually a card, I don't remember if we talked about it on the podcast, but I've mentioned this card to you before. I can't remember if it was on the podcast or not. But it is a kind of reminiscent of Tauros GX, and then also it's got the same attack as Moltres V, which is a pretty good attack. It is a psychic type basic Pokemon. You can one-hit KO Urshifus. It's not a Hoopa, though, so you can't one-hit KO Urshifus and Mews. So I don't know if I love the Grand Bull over the Hoopa, but Grand Bull is not weak to Celebi, so maybe kind of just one step ahead. If you're ready for the Urshifus, you're playing at a European event, you know that a lot of those good players love to play the Urshifu deck. Granbull V, not a bad choice at all.
Yeah, the Granbull V, I saw that. The list looks so weird because there's so little going on. It is like an Arceus B barrel with just the Granbull as the only other attacker. It's literally just 4-3 Arceus, 2-2 B barrel, the Goon, the Dunsparce, the Punkaboo, and then Granbull. And then it's got the Charms, the Charon's Cares. So, I mean, it's pretty much as Arceus B barrel, but it, like, basically it looks like the build that me and you had both been playing a lot at the beginning of that format, where it was like the Arceus B barrel with the Crobat VMAX in there as kind of your Mew answer. So the only answer for Mew in this deck is double big Charm, Charon's Care plus Path, and try and eventually stop them from one hit KOing you and then use Charon's Care.
And then four copies of Marnie as well. And
yeah, you got the Marnies.
Super heavy Marnie. Really solid, honestly. And this is something I heard Andrew Mahone talking about After a tournament, I think it was after he got top 128 or whatever it was at Indianapolis or Secaucus, whatever the most recent, Secaucus, I believe, how that was like a big inclusion for them in one of their decks. Maybe it was after the Indy Regionals with the Whimsicott deck, where it was like, just the second, like, especially against Inteleon decks, like spamming Marnie back to back to back, it's hard for them to regain their hand size, which is what those decks love to do.
Yeah, and then I mean, just like what the B-Barrel, I mean, there's no Crobat in here, so you don't have that edge over the Inteleon build, I guess, but the B-Barrel build has always felt like your turn one, turn two just feels more consistent. And it just has probably one of the biggest reasons is just like for having four Ultra Ball and having like a higher route to Trinity Charge. So, but yeah, definitely still solid. Yeah, it's very, the deck looks like very much like there's nothing going on in it. When I looked at the list for the first time, I was like, there's just nothing here. It's got the Grand Bowl, but it's like the deck it doesn't play anything. It's literally just an Arceus deck.
Yeah. I mean, hey, Arceus is all you need, I guess, right? Best card in the format right now. Just roll with that. You can throw whatever else you want with it, and hey, you'll probably do just fine. So now let's go ahead and move on to the regionals in Santiago, which was won by Andres Gajardo, who was playing Mew VMAX. And how fitting is it, Azul, that the very first regionals in this format was won by Mew VMAX, and then the very last regionals in the format was also won by Mew VMAX?
Also, probably, like, I mean, a lot of people saying the best deck overall in the format, even if it doesn't have as many wins. I mean, there was, like, a lot of different decks that, I guess, won major tournaments overall, right? Even if it's Arceus, there's a lot of different Arceus variants that did well consistently. But, yeah, Mew on top at the final regional in the format. The list was a catcher build. There was some catchers in there. It was a catcher build. And I guess a tech that they played that probably worked out pretty well, because I'm like looking at the standings again. There was three Beedrill Arceus in top 16, and they did bring the big Parasol as one of their kind of tech cards. Rocked the Parasol, rocked the Echoing Horn, and then catchers, and kind of just straightforward Mew from there. Nothing too spicy besides the Parasol, I guess. That's like the spiciest deck. But it looks like it probably took a game or two off a couple of Beedrills because of that. Because, yeah, there is three Arceus Beedrill in the top 16 and four total in the day two.
Yeah, Arceus Beedrill still proving to be very popular. People just love to play these type of decks. Even, I remember, you know, Archie, whenever it was really popular and expanded, there were people, like, there was just always going to be some Archies in day two in the top 32, because people just love playing these type of decks. They're a lot of fun, you know, thinning your hand down, pulling off those combos. It makes you feel really rewarded for setting things up properly, and it's just fun to sequence it together as well. So yeah, congratulations to Andres, who did win with the Mew and took down Marco Cifuentes in the finals, who was playing the Ice Rider. Marco, I believe, let me confirm this, yes, did do really well in the Players Cup events online, did well in some of the online events, and is, you know, a great player from Chile in the past as well. So getting second place with the Ice Rider, definitely something that we've talked about picking up a little bit more steam. I think that it's going to be pretty solid in this next format. It almost feels like it's kind of still just in a weird spot in the current format. I don't know. Maybe it'll be just more of the same, but it definitely does get a few nice new tools in this new format. You can either play it with Palkia, or you can play it with the Hawlucha, which is definitely a big help against something like the Mew VMAX.
Yeah, it definitely seems like it gets a little bit better overall going forwards. I guess, like, the other things, nothing else really stands out to me in this topic. Yeah, a couple Ice Riders mentioned Joao with the Inteleon VMAX in the top eight as well. And yeah, a lot of Arceus. So there's actually just like a lot of Arceus. So, like, I just scroll down and there's just like Arceus ever more. It's much more Arceus in this event than in the day two. I guess there's a lot of Arceus in Milan as well, but less Inteleon Arceus. I don't know, it's weird. It feels like, I once again, just talking about like meta differences in regions, it feels like, and maybe it's just kind of what did well on the day as well. That's also going to be a huge impact. Like, definitely, you know, the players who are just running a little bit hotter, you know, that's going to be a big boost overall to your overall end placement. There is a couple of people playing like similar lists to Parker Lish's with the Crushing Hammers as well, which you didn't see any of that pop up in Milan, but kind of talking back towards, besides to Mao, I guess, kind of talking back towards, it feels like Europeans maybe like just flipping less coins than the rest of the world in the Pokemon trading card game.
Yeah, and something else I noticed too is, like, we see a little bit less Marnie from Europe as well. I remember hearing Grant joking about after Robin won with the Urshifu deck, which has a pretty tough time if you get Marnied. There was like two decks in that top eight that even played a copy of Marnie. And Grant said, like, Europeans are just on another level. It doesn't matter if your deck loses to Marnie if nobody in your country plays Marnie. And, you know, I mean, we just don't see quite as much of it. It still, you know, is a solid card, obviously, and will pop up in certain decks. But I think the main thing there is that a lot of Inteleon decks just don't love playing Marnie because they want to keep a big hand, too. And just giving, even though you're giving your opponent just four, giving yourself five is not enough to work with.
Yeah, yeah. Most of the Arceus Inteleon decks all choosing to play, you know, usually just kind of one copy of Marnie, maybe two, especially if it's like the Beedrill build or something, because like your other draw supporters are the Mustards. So, and then even if you look at like Ice Rider decks, they only usually play one, maybe two, because they have the Melanie every turn. Right. So, yeah, not a whole ton of Marnies in the format in general right now. But you look at the other Arceus, you look at like the Arceus decks that don't play Inteleon, and then they're usually playing, you know, the four, the three to four copies of Marnie. Of course,
if they're playing Beaverell.
Yeah, you can't as consistently find it because you don't have Shady Dealings, but like you'll be able to find them, you know, throughout a game of Pokemon. You'll be able to find two to three of them pretty easily, and especially if you're running like a Lumineon or a Crobat, you know, that helps you find them and can be pretty, yeah, pretty tough to deal with if you are playing a Inteleon build. No matter what you're playing with Inteleon, Marnie can be super annoying throughout a lot of situations. There's very few times I feel like with Inteleon builds where it's like you want your opponent to Marnie. It's like, okay, my hand could be better, but the chance that it's better is probably not very high, so I'd rather just keep my current cards, but I guess, you know, I'm getting Marnie here. We'll see how it goes. And it might even get, it's going to get worse, you know, in the current format now that we have Roxanne.
So one last thing in this current tournament weekend I wanted to talk about was Whimsicott, which got a top eight in Milan and then had a couple of day two finishes, both of them getting top 32 in Santiago. So Whimsicott is a deck that I don't feel like is super well positioned for the next format. It still could pop up and do okay. It's going to kind of depend how the meta shapes up. I think, obviously, it does not do great against Palkia. So if Palkia is proving to be a force, Whimsicott is probably going to have a hard time in the metagame. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. How do you feel about where Whimsicott has kind of ended up in this current format? You know, we see one top eight, a couple other top 32s. Just kind of like one of those okay decks that, was it kind of like a one-trick pony, or is it just kind of, you know, just okay?
I mean, I think it was like the meta that we had for Brilliant Stars has actually ended up being pretty good for us at a couple points, right? EUIC with Frank, and then even immediately after that, Indiana Regionals, and we saw Alessandro win a tournament with it as well. Like, those are like good times for it. After that, I think one of the biggest things was people learning the matchup against it a little bit. More people switching over to more Arceus decks with more basic energy definitely hurt it a lot. We saw more of the B-Barrel builds, like the Gyarados Jolteon, the Malamar Jolteon B-Barrel build, like just more basic energy. So that's going to hurt the Whimsicott. And then going forwards into Astral Radiance, it's probably not playable for all of the Astral Radiance format on a competitive level, because Palkia, basic energy. If Darkrai's good, a lot of basic energy. If Samurott's good, a lot of basic energy. So everything just has a lot of basic energy in it. And even if Mew and Arceus are still around, I don't think they make up enough of the meta share going forwards where you're going to want to play, Whimsicott. And maybe into the next set, special energy becomes more dominant, and that's the kind of the time to bring Whimsicott back. But even like also like Miltank is like something that you can't very easily deal with as Whimsicott. So there's just like a lot of problems with it. So going forwards, I think it's pretty much toast, but it's had its moment, and it's one of those cards where it's like it's not powerful enough to be consistently good anyway. So at least it's got its moment. Like unfortunately, like a lot of V-Stars won't, you know, it got in there for a short time, but yeah, it's probably, you know, short-lived, and it at least got in there, though.
So that will conclude the Brilliant Stars format. We're all about Astral Radiance now. Out with the old, in with the new, moving full steam ahead. Palkia V-Stars, Dialga V-Stars, all kinds of cool stuff. Regigigas is running around. Miltank haunting everyone's dreams already, just a couple of weeks in. So before we dive into the Melbourne Regionals, which is coming up this weekend, and talk about some of our favorite plays or just thoughts on the way the meta has shaped up, we're going to talk a little bit about just some of our favorite decks to play so far in Astral Radiance. So what are some of the decks that you've personally been having the most fun with so far with the new set?
I mean, I'm trying a lot of the old stuff with new cards, like Mew with trekking shoes. The deck I've definitely played the most is Regigigas, though. I've definitely played the most out of any other deck from the new format. I've definitely played Regigigas the
most. Dude, the Gigas deck is so much fun to play.
It is, yeah. Unfortunately, I don't think it is quite competitive. Like, it's not good enough to be consistently competitive. And I don't think it'll... I don't think it's, like, a deck that's kind of waiting for, like, a hole in the meta to become good. I think the deck overall just isn't powerful enough. If you run hot enough with it and hit enough of the right matchups, you can definitely do well with it. We see it, like, constantly placing in online tournaments, even, like, some of the really, really big ones. But it just... It isn't quite consistently powerful enough to, like, actually... be like a factor in the meta. Like, it's not a deck you really have to worry about, and it's not a deck you probably want to invest, like, you know, all of your time into trying to make, you know, work. So I mean, it's really cool, ton of fun, definitely recommend trying it out and playing with it. But trying to win, you know, trying to day two a regional, trying to win a regional, trying to top eight a regional, whatever, I would not pursue it too much.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's fun, and it's like a solid budget deck. It fits that niche pretty nicely. Maybe it'll fall into the same spot for this format that Malamar fell into for the last format, like a powerful deck that, you know, you can buy for $40 and roll up to a tournament and have a decent shot to make cut at. Yeah, the Gigas is a lot of fun. I've also played it quite a bit. Sorry, you were about to say something.
That did end up getting pretty bad for Malamar eventually, though. Like, the meta got worse and worse for Malamar this the more it went on.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Gigas. We talked about this a little bit last week, but it is definitely a counterable deck. So if it ever did start to do really well, we will see a lot more Avery's popping up. We'll see some of those Temple of Sinnohs popping up. All of these things. Heavy Marnie is not great for the deck either, to be honest. You know, Gigas is fun. It's cool. And I've played it a lot as well. It is definitely a good time. It's a blast to play. Something I've been playing a decent amount of. I've been playing a lot of just Malamar VMAX stuff, which is, I know, is not a new card, but the card itself got a lot better by this new set with the Dark Patch, with the Roxanne. So, you know, just trying to see if I can cheese some games with a bunch of Marnies and just trying to power up Malamar super quickly and be really aggressive with a VMAX. I've also tried a few different decks with the new Diancie, with its ability that allows you your bench Pokemon to be protected from boss's orders. The problem I've found playing that deck is that we see some of these Palkias playing Cross Switcher, and Diancie does not protect from Cross Switcher. So anything I'm trying to set up on the bench, like, you know, a Zacian or... you know, a Malamar V, not evolving it into a VMAX until I'm ready to go in with it, which is another strategy I tried. It doesn't really work out when your opponent is playing Cross Switcher. So, Diancie is a really cool card, but it's got its issues, obviously.
Yeah, and the Cross Switchers seem to be getting, like, more and more popular in the Palkia builds. And you got, like, Mews with Catchers, and then, like, you also have, like, Escape Ropes sometimes being in quite a few different decks. And if, you know, then they can just follow it up with the boss if you don't get down double Diancie. But yeah, another deck that I've been like, I think is like, it's good. It's really good when it sets up is, and it does abuse Diancie sometimes, is Dialga. Dialga is like insane when it gets set up, but it's really hard to do it consistently. But when you do it, it's pretty crazy. Like it's V-Star powers with GX power. It's V-Star power is just so strong. Being able to take an extra turn for the amount of damage you deal with it is just... it's just kind of absurd, to be honest. Like it's kind of scary. But yeah, if you you can't hide it behind your Diancies for long enough, or your opponent gets off a boss early before you get Diancie in the active, like it starts to crumble pretty quickly. But another one, I think it's a deck, and I even saw Henry Brand posted like a tier list of decks heading into Melbourne Regionals, and the Dialga was in the not yet tier list. So like, and that's not how I feel about it too. Yeah, that's how I feel about it too right now. I feel like I think it might be able to become viable in this format, but it might need just a format switch or another set to come out to really push it to the next level. Or we might just be waiting on someone to kind of, you know, break the deck wide open and come up with that list that kind of pushes it over the edge.
Yeah, definitely. So there's a lot of our favorites so far from Astral Radiance. The format is still young. There's still a lot to discover, and a lot of that will be discovered, hopefully, at Melbourne Regionals this weekend. I'm looking forward to seeing how it will all play out. But before we dive into Melbourne, we got one more thing, and it's everyone's favorite segment of the podcast. It's time for Guess That Flavor Text, where Azul or I picks a Pokemon, picks the flavor text on the card, and reads it off to the other one. The other person has to guess and see if they can get it correct. Guess the Pokemon just based off of the little bit of text in the bottom right corner of the card. We, of course, have three different lifelines that the player can choose to use at any time. Either what set the card is from, what stage the card is, or have the reader read an attack name from the card. And Azul, I gotta say, I think you're gonna be able to get this one this week. Hopefully I've not jinxed you just now. I think this is one that you should get. So let me know when you're ready. We can get into it.
All right, I'm ready. I'm actually like curious now that because like you mentioned, like you said, like there was a point where there was no flavor text on cards, right? Like I know like GXs and Vs don't have flavor text, but wasn't there a point where even like the basics?
No. I'm pretty sure it's been around since like base set, bro.
Okay, for some reason it's like in my head that I'm like thinking of like maybe it's like do Radiant cards have flavor text? They don't have flavor text, right?
I think they do.
Might do they? I actually don't even know. I had one by me. I don't. They have do. One by me. But they do.
Yes.
I thought there was at one point where there was sets where the you know there's like the normal Pokemon cards just did not have flavor text. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just like I'm thinking about the first time I saw like a EX or something and they didn't have flavor text.
It used to be like in a different spot. So like on the old cards, it's in like a little box on the bottom as opposed to in the bottom corner. Maybe in the EX era they didn't have it.
Oh, you know what I'm thinking of? I'm thinking of the height and weight. We don't have the height and weight of Pokemon on cards anymore. Or there was a point where the height and weight was not on Pokemon cards. I don't even know if it is or isn't right now.
It is. I got a card right now. I think the height and weight has always been on cards though.
No, I'm pretty sure there was a point where it wasn't. I could be wrong on that as well.
Okay.
I'm probably wrong on that.
No, I'm looking at... So I just typed in Caterpie to PKM in cards because that's like a Pokemon that's been printed through all eras of the game. And base set Caterpie, it's got the height and weight and also flavor text. But if we look at the Caterpie from Expedition, it has no flavor text and no height or weight. The Caterpie from Fire Red Leaf Green has no flavor text or height or weight, so maybe that's the era, but you weren't even playing in that era, so
yeah, I think it's probably just because I've seen old cards and like I've noticed that there was no height and weight or
he's always looking out for the flavor text. He's been studying.
Exactly.
All right, Azul, all right, let's get into it. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. It slips into the shadows of others and mimics their powers and movements. As it improves, it becomes stronger than those it's imitating.
Okay. So, the first Pokemon that I just think of immediately when I hear that is Mimikyu. Because it is, in its name, is Mimic. And it does want to be Pikachu, but it is also like a pretender or whatever. Like, it's like a Mimics, right? Its attack is copycat in a lot of the cards. I think of Mr. Mime as well because of mimicking, but like that doesn't make any sense. There's no way it's in Mr. Mime. Mr. Mime's not slipping into shadows and like copying you. It's not Mr. Mime. I think it's Mimikyu. I can't think of any other card. I guess something like a Haunter or a Ghastly, maybe Gengar, because Gengar is kind of like a trickster Pokemon, but like not like in that way. I don't know if I want to use any of my lifelines or if I just want to get, because I'm pretty confident. Like the only thing I can think of is Mimikyu. So I don't even know if Chip answered any of the questions of the set the card is from, what stage the card is. Maybe I should have him actually read an attack from the Pokemon.
All right, you want me to read an attack?
Attack name, yeah.
All right. An attack from the card I picked is Shadow Imitation.
Sheesh. Now I feel less confident in Mimikyu. I can't think of like a shadow Pokemon besides Mimikyu. It seems like it still should be Mimikyu. But I can't think of a Mimikyu that's ever had the attack Shadow Imitation. Maybe Marshadow has Shadow in the name, but I don't think that's what Marshadow is about. All right, I think we're going to have to go through some more lifelines here. Okay, what stage is the card?
It is a basic Pokemon.
All right, just for the sake of trying to nail down a point here, what I'm going to use the last lifeline. What set is the card from?
This card is from Cosmic Eclipse.
Okay, Cosmic. I'm pretty sure there's a Marshadow in Cosmic Eclipse, but I don't know if I actually just have. See, this is the set one is never going to help me because I don't remember cards by what set they're from. Cosmic Eclipse. What came out of Cosmic Eclipse? Was that the one where Cosmic Eclipse is when we got the Necrozma, right? With Magnezone, I think.
I am not at liberty to answer this question. You have used your lifelines. You're getting no information out of me.
It has to be Marshadow or Mimikyu. I just don't know which one it is at this point. What was the name of the attack again?
It is Shadow Imitation. Gotta lock in a guess here.
I'm locking in Marshadow.
And you would be correct, Azul. It is Marshadow. Congratulations. You get one right. The first time either of us has gotten one right in what feels like forever. Congratulations, Azul. It is Marshadow from Cosmic Eclipse. You played this card in a deck.
What set is Cosmic Eclipse?
It's the ADP set. It's the last Sun and Moon
set. Oh. Yeah, I played it in the Mew. I thought Cosmic Eclipse was... What set is the one where Necrozma came out then?
That's Cosmic something, like, right? Ultra Prism. one of the very first.
I don't know why. Yeah. Whenever someone says Cosmic Eclipse, for some reason, I think that set is the set where we got Dark Main Necrozma with the Magnezone.
No.
I don't know why. I always think that set is Cosmic Eclipse, but Cosmic Eclipse is a Sword and Shield set. All right, I'll have to remember that for the future.
All right, and with that correct answer, Azul has pulled ahead on the all-time leaderboard. We are at episode 13, and Azul has 2 points. I have one. We are fake Pokemon fans. Also, for what it's worth, Azul, and for anyone else who's listening who was wondering, there is also a Mimikyu in Cosmic Eclipse.
Yeah. Well, is it the copycat one?
No, it is the shadow box one, where if like it has a damage counter on it, it can't use its abilities. Okay. The other Marshadow. So I initially had picked Marshadow from Unbroken Bonds, which is the resetting hole one.
Yeah.
But it has the exact same flavor text. But then I realized that its attack name, I think, would have just given it away instantly, which is Red Knuckles.
Yeah, I would have. I
think you would have gotten it instantly. So I had to.
I've used Red Knuckles before.
I almost chose the Marshadow from Evolving Skies, whose two attacks are Rapid Hunt and Shadow Flicker. And that would have thrown you off completely, I think. So I wanted to give you at least a little chance to get it right. So
I think I would have got that one, actually, because I know the Rapid Hunt one. I know that's the only Pokemon that searches for Rapid Shot cards out of your deck, I'm pretty sure, like that. So I think I might have got that one. Like, I've looked at that card before. I might have got that one correct. I might have got that one correct, to be honest.
Well, regardless, you did get it correct, so congratulations, Azul. Yeah, pull ahead and let us know down in the comments if you're watching on YouTube. Did you get the flavor text right this week? What's your scoreboard looking like? It's surely better than 1 point for me or 2 points from Azul. Okay, after I got Regigigas wrong last week, I had people message me and be like, are you even a Pokemon fan? Caracosta was not a very good guess.
You need to use one lifeline and you probably would have got it.
Nah, lifelines are a scam. Lifelines are a scam for sure. All right, well, let's move it on. And let's talk about Melbourne Regionals, which is happening this weekend in Australia. It will be streamed, sort of, but only top eight will be streamed. It'll be streamed by ESL Australia, and I believe ESL Australia who handles the live streaming for like the internationals as well that are in Oceania. So it's probably going to be a pretty high-level production. Maybe not, actually, now that I think about it. I don't know how big of a production they're going to bring out if they're just streaming three games. So we'll see. Commentary will be done by Mitch Nucky, a.k.a. Sableyes on YouTube, and Ellis Longhurst. So I'm excited to watch that. This will be the first time I believe Mitch has done like any sort of official type of commentary. Ellis has done it for the internationals in the past, and she always does a great job. She's a writer for the Pokemon website and always is up on her stuff, knows her stuff for sure. So I'm looking forward to it. Going to be a fun tournament to watch. But there's a lot to talk about here, Azul. We've got old decks that are trying to remain solid. We've got new decks that are trying to prove that they can stand up with the old Titans. Melbourne Regionals, what are we thinking? Starting off, let's just start with Palkia. How do we feel Palkia is poised this weekend? Because it is definitely the biggest deck to come out of the new set.
Yeah, I think it's definitely the best overall deck in the format, it feels like, except it has the obvious weakness of being weak to Lightning, but it doesn't have any, like, strategic weaknesses other than, you know, I guess, like, compared to Arceus, all of your Pokemon's abilities are on water Pokemon, so baby Jolteon hits you a little bit harder than it did some of the Arceus decks. Yeah, Palkia, like Palkia with Inteleon versus Arceus with Inteleon, you're all in on water ability. So if your opponent goes first and turn two Jolteons you, like, that's yikes. That's rough. But it's one of the decks that abuses the Greninja the best. The Greninja is an insanely powerful card because you get to attack with it. Like, no, the only other deck that can attack with it is like the Greninja Frostmoth deck, but that deck's not very good. So if you're something, you got something like Palkia to back the Greninja up, it, like, the Greninja, like, makes the deck. If Greninja wasn't a card or just didn't have that attack, I don't actually think Palkia would be that good or scary, but because of the Greninja and like the amount of diversity it adds to your strategies throughout a game just completely changes like what you can do and how much pressure you can put on your opponent in different ways. So it's very good. Probably be the most played or second most played deck behind Mew.
Like, you think it'll be the most played?
Yeah, as long as people can get their hands on the Palkias, I don't see why
I
not.
I think that it's tough for it to be the most played for that reason, mainly. I think
that's the question.
I mean, I think that card availability will certainly be a reasonable barrier. The cards are still pretty expensive as well right now, and a lot of people already have their Mew VMAXs. They've got their Arceus cards, and those cards are still good. So I think that we'll still see a lot of people kind of default to those, most likely. But, I mean, I think Palkia is obviously very strong. In the little outline here, I wrote down an over-under for Palkia. So I wanted to hear your thoughts. Over-under 2.5 Palkia in top 8. We think there's going to be 3 or more, or just 1 or 2?
That's tough, because it depends if people are going to like find... So far, I haven't seen like too many solid answers to Palkia that also... like, and I don't think Palkia is going to be extremely popular like Mew was. Like, we're talking 30% of the format or anything like that. But I think if the people who want to play Palkia are able to, it's definitely going to be like top 2 most popular, probably alongside Mew at most regionals going forward, at most tournaments going forward. It'll be like top 2 most popular, especially because when you're not lumping Arceus together, because I feel like Arceus is getting more and more diverse the more it's played. You got the Arceus Malamar VMAXs, Arceus with Baby Jolteon, Arceus with Beedrill and Inteleon, Arceus with Inteleon. Like, those are all very different variants, I feel like, this at this point. And then they do kind of get lumped together because it's so hard to separate Arceus decks. But for our set breaking them down, I think it'll be the most popular. The biggest thing is just like how many solid counters have people come up with to beat Palkia? Because right now I haven't seen anything too solid, unless you're committing your deck to something like Arceus Flying Pikachu or Arceus Coco VMAX. Like, in those decks, they're not solid decks in the format. They're just really good against Palkia. So it depends. If there's that much Palkia in the room, then those decks are good, right? If we're talking Palkia is 30% of the meta, then playing those kind of decks are like kind of fine. But if Palkia is more like 15%, but still the most popular, you want to beat it, but you don't want to lose to everything else. So I would probably say we'll see 1 to 2 Palkia in the top 8 overall. That'd be my guess. It'd be 1 to 2. As long as there's enough cool, as long as enough people come up with enough cool answers that kind of beat Palkia without actually losing to the rest of the room.
Yeah, with an over-under at 2.5, I'm definitely taking the under on the 2.5 as well. I just think that there's probably just too many people who already have cards for other decks that are going to go with that. Obviously, Palkia is very solid, but another deck that's pretty solid is Mew VMAX. It did not win the last Australian Regionals, but it won the first Australian Regionals. It did pretty well in Perth. It's been doing pretty well. It just won the last tournament in the Brilliant Stars format, so it is proven that it is solid. And you mentioned this earlier when you're talking about your win with Mew at the 1K. A good time to play the best deck of the last format is at the beginning of the new format, because everyone's trying out the new stuff and they're not really worried about countering stuff from the past.
Yeah. And actually, like, one more thing I'll kind of talk on, like, actually towards the end of this, the later half of this format, or even maybe just like if I look at like every regional, Mew is kind of dominating top eights for the most part. Like, it's not winning. Okay, yeah. So towards the latter half of this format, like, it's not winning everyone, but there was 3 in the top 8 of Santiago. And if you look, there is 2 Arceus decks in the top 8 of Santiago, but they're different Arceus decks. The 2 Ice Riders you could categorize. So there's 2 Ice Riders, 3 Mew, 1-1 on the Arceus, 1 Inteleon. You look at the Milan, there was 1, 2, 3 Mews in that top 8 as well. 3 different Arceus variants. So we're going to break them up once again. 1-1, 1-1, Urshi, 1 Whimsicott. So Mew is kind of dominating like the latter half of the format in general. And I feel like it's possible maybe that just continues going forward. It just feels really good going for it. I guess Mew's just good. And I think it's even better going into these maybe first two regionals as well, going towards Milwaukee after Melbourne. It's kind of crazy. So yeah, it's very, very good. Yeah, even though it's not winning everything, it is kind of like that thought just kind of came to me. It is just kind of dominating top eights right now. It's not winning everything, but it's 3 to 4 of them in most top eights is that's a pretty big share of the top eight.
So I don't think either of us would be surprised to see a couple Palkias in top eight, a few Mews, a few Arceus variants in top eight this weekend. Even something like Urshifu, I wouldn't be incredibly surprised if it found a way to make it into the top eight. But there's definitely some decks out there that would surprise me. Rogue decks that I think could do well, but it's unlikely that they make top eight. So what would be your pick for a deck, a rogue deck to make top eight? I think for me, my pick would be something like Turbo Dark, which is a deck that is pretty heavily slept on right now. But it can, if you just have a really consistent, aggressive list, going first, it is so easy to just take one-hit knockouts on Pokemon V with Moltres V or Darkrai even. You can get up there. Going second, you can just threaten one-hit knockouts with Moltres V, which is pretty nuts. And there's a lot going for it. I think that it is definitely a little slept on right now. Isaiah Bradner, I think, just wrote an article about how Turbo Dark is a little slept on, and I really agreed with, you know, the start of that I read. So, listen, bro, I didn't finish it. It's okay, though.
Yeah, I think it's almost similar to Dialga in that aspect, where I feel like we haven't seen the best list for it yet. Like, I think we're still kind of waiting for that best list for Darkrai, or the way to play it. Of course, there's not as much depth to something like a Darkrai deck as there could be like to an Arceus or even maybe a Palkia, because you got to play like 14 Dark Energy, and your goal is to literally just put Dark Energy in play. So you can't get too creative, but we maybe haven't found, like, the Bradner list definitely looked interesting. It had some unique stuff that I had personally thought about, but hadn't tested out yet, but it had some interesting stuff in there for sure. One thing I haven't seen in the Turbo Dark list yet is Cross Switchers, and someone brought it up to me initially, and I was like, yeah, no chance. But the more I thought about it, I was like, your V-Star power does recover like a Cross Switcher, and if you could play an extra Research for a turn while gusting, that's kind of good. So to be honest, I could see some kind of Cross Switcher Darkrai deck. That's like something I've been wanting to test out, is put Cross Switchers in Turbo Dark and just like see what happens, because even if you discard one early, your V-Star power allows you to retrieve it later on and then get to utilize it again, and then just kind of carry on and stay ahead in the prize trade until you get to the point where you've got enough energy in play to actually take that big one hit KO you were avoiding by playing the Cross Switchers a turn previously. Maybe on the next turn is when you want to KO their Palkia V-Star after KOing a Palkia V or something like that. I think the deck, for me, just because I want to see it, the couple lists I played have been like solid, and I feel like it's super strong. It's just Dialga. I would love it if someone found a different way to play Dialga than what I've tried, and hopefully it's better than what I've tried, because what I've tried hasn't been bad. It's just like there's too many gaps in the game plan. Actually, right now in late night, we have Rigi with a Dialga, like a very cool Dialga build, who is currently in the finals of the late night tournament, and this build is like as straightforward as possible, basically. 2-2 Dialga as the only attacker in the deck, and then Mews, Crobats, Greninja, turboing through the deck, trying to get to that V-Star power as soon as possible. Like I said, the V-Star power is super, super strong. You just need to get there. And even just the first attack is kind of crazy. Like, for 6 energy, you are kind of one-hit KOing pretty much almost anything relevant. You do need that 7th energy for the Mew matchup. But, I'm going to pick Dialga as my kind of rogue deck that I want to make top 8 for sure.
Yeah, we're recording this kind of late, so we've been keeping our eyes on this late night tournament a little bit, and yeah, Rigi making it to the finals. We'll see if by the time we're done, if the tournament has ended and Dialga has come out on top, because that is definitely a very interesting list, with the Mew from Celebrations being kind of the support, the setup for the turbo engine here with the Crobats, and just getting through the deck really quick. We call it turbo, but there's no research in this deck, which is kind of wild.
Yeah. But you got Trekking Shoes, you got 4 Scoop Up Net, Mew.
But, you know, whenever there's a card that says discard your hand, draw 7 cards, like, that feels like it fits pretty naturally into a turbo deck, right?
That's true for sure. I guess you don't want to discard the Cross Switchers. That's maybe probably one of the main reasons. There's 4 Cross Switchers in the list. You're not trying to discard those with the research, trying to conserve them.
Definitely true. Okay, so those are our picks for rogue decks. Let us know in the comments of the YouTube video if you're watching on YouTube. What is your pick for a rogue deck to make top eight at the Melbourne Regional Championships? And looking at, you know, something that could possibly be a rogue deck, since there's really no defined way to play it in this current meta, it doesn't feel like, and it can go with anything, that is, of course, Arceus V-Star. So Arceus Inteleon ruled the last format. Arceus Beedrill was very popular as well. But moving into this format, there's been a lot more experimentation, it feels like. There's been a lot of the Coco VMAX and the Pikachu that you mentioned.
Yeah.
There's, you know, still obviously Arceus Inteleon is a pretty solid option. Arceus Duraludon, I've seen some people talking about once again. There's a lot of special energy stuff still out there. Obviously, probably not the best against Palkia, but you don't have to have that many Pokemon on your bench, I guess. So there's that trade-off. And it does hit through Miltank's effect. So anyway, what are your thoughts, Azul, on the best way to currently be playing Arceus? Are you packing one of the lightning attackers? Are you packing a lightning tech like the Raikou V, something like that? Or are you sticking to one of the old builds?
So I haven't invested a ton of time into Arceus. I think Arceus Inteleon is still pretty strong. The Palkia matchup's not terrible. Probably need an extra big charm. And Avery's very good in that matchup to help limit their bench. Like, if they, when they go for a big one-hit KO, if they can get there, that turn you can kind of Avery as your response to reset them a little bit. You to take your, put on your pressure with your attacks and setting up your next Arceus. Like I said, second big charm, you know, you don't want to be taking too many prize cards too fast. I feel like the biggest annoyance in that matchup is the Greninja, because it like forces you to play Manaphy, put Manaphy in play. That's another Pokemon in play. And then you already need at least like two Sobble, two Inteleon lines to be building up towards to like get things going. So it's at least four bench Pokemon right there. Manaphy, Sobble, Drizzile, Arceus, Arceus in the active. So I feel like I'm definitely favoring the non-Inteleon Arceus builds, the B-Barrels, the Jolteons, there's something like Parker Lish's list even. Crushing Hammer is still pretty good against Palkia, to be honest, because it takes away their really explosive plays. Like now they have to use their V-Star power to actually attack on their next turn as opposed to set up for a Greninja play or like a Aqua Bullet play. They just have to like use their V-Star power to be able to even attack on the following turn. And also, Path to the Peak's pretty good against them as well. Shut down the Greninja, potentially take away their Starburst play, so, or their V-Star power play. So yeah, I think I'm definitely like favoring the non-Inteleon Arceus builds a little bit more, just because of like the Greninja is just so good in Palkia, and you just don't want to have to deal with it throughout the whole game and have it be something you're worried about like at every single turn. And you like need shady dealings when you build your deck around Inteleon. So what about you, Chip? What is your go-to Arceus play right now?
I think I'm definitely leaning towards a Beedrill engine, and I'm also probably putting Jolteon in my deck. There's just so much of the water stuff. Inteleon is still going to be good in the Ice Rider decks. If there's any Urshifu, those will be playing the Inteleon. Of course, Arceus Inteleon will still probably exist, and of course, now Palkia being a big part of the format. I don't know that I'm going to go the full Arceus Jolteon Malamar necessarily. I would try to pack something for Mew, but I would be curious to see if you just threw a couple Roxanne in with the four path, if like Heavy Marnie plus Roxanne is enough to beat Mew with the big charms and stuff like that. Of course, Crushing Hammers could also make their way in there, which can be solid. So I think that Jolteon is definitely a card that is going to be pretty solid this weekend, though, if people can find the right way to play it. And I think the best way to play it is probably just with Arceus.
Yeah, it definitely seems. I mean, like the only like consistent way to get it out turn two, right, is like
combo. Unless you're using Inteleon, and then you're shutting off your own Inteleon.
Get Shopping Center in there, though. It's kind of like Hex or something. Excuse me? I've tried it.
You've tried it?
I mean, from what I've tried, it's just like too much going on. It's too much going on.
Shopping Center, I mean, Jolteon Inteleon. Bro, Azul's out here leaking the sauce. All right.
You gotta find your stadium.
There you go. There's our thoughts on where Arceus is at currently. Arceus Beedrill just doesn't feel great right now, even though that's been one of the most popular ways to play it, because it just doesn't do anything against the new best deck.
Yeah, there's like a lot more basic energy in the format. Like, even if, I mean, okay, so the one thing, like, my initial thought was like, oh, but all the new Pokemon all use basic energy. But it's like, oh, wait, but half of the V stars that are coming out of the set that seem decent are weak to grass. So Choice Belt plus Beedrill, one of KO's Darkrai and Samurott, but Darkrai and Samurott aren't good. So now you're just back to, okay, there's a lot of Palkia and they all play basic energy. So it's like, the Beedrill's still really good against Mew. Definitely expected to be top two most popular decks, and probably to be honest, Mew's probably expected to be the most successful deck, I would guess, going into this weekend, to be honest. Like, the more I think about it, like,
yeah,
Palkia is the one with the bigger target on its back. And even if Mew still is known and people are making sure, you know, people got their Roxanne paths now, you know, some people are still playing dark stuff in their decks. Like, people have all of that, and that's good, that's solid. But I still feel like it's got a little bit less of a target on its back. And I mean, it's never stopped Mew before. Like, people have been running dark stuff for tournaments for months now, and Mew's still like, all right, I'll still top eight, you know? So, like, and it's been, like I said, it's been dominating the top eights recently. So I think, yeah, I think there's like, yeah, I mean, the Beedrill is still good for that. But yeah, with Palkia being so popular, it's hard to want to play it, to be honest. It's just like, and then who knows? People could bring out the big parasols again as well. So you don't know if they're going to be packing the parasol or not. If they are, finding another room. What I found when I was like messing around with the Beedrill list, like finding that room for Tool Scrapper, especially when you're also having to tech for Palkia, because that list has to play like Raikou or Zerora or something. Like, Arceus Beedrill can't not play a Lightning Attacker and then beat Palkia. Like, so you don't have room for Tool Scrapper to get rid of their parasol in the Mew matchup. So yeah, the Beedrill build just doesn't feel great right now. I think Arceus Inteleon is even feeling a little bit shaky, but I mean, besides those, what other V stars do you think could have a chance, I guess, in this tournament, but, or even just going forwards in general? Do you think the Lilligant's and the Samurott's will have any hope at all?
Yeah, I don't love Samurott. I think I talked about this last week, how it's just trying to do the same thing Palkia does, but it just needs more than Palkia does in order to pull it off. I mentioned Darkrai. I do think Darkrai is like a little slept on. It could definitely be very solid. But I'll also say that the grass stuff is not necessarily bad. Lilligant isn't amazing, but Shaymin V-Star is honestly pretty solid. Yeah. That card hits really hard, really quickly. It's like a Moltres that has a lot more HP, and with Gardenia's Vigor is not the best. It's not nearly as good as Welder, but it is still good. Energy acceleration on a supporter that also sees you more cards is very solid. Definitely something to consider. So yeah, I think that I'd probably like Shaymin V-Star a little bit more than Lilligant. Lilligant is just kind of not... it just kind of needs a little too much 3 energy, right? Even with the Gardenias, you need to switch it into the active. But Shaymin is a little bit lower maintenance. The problem, I think Shaymin probably fits best with Arceus V-Star. And then it's like, are we really going to commit extra deck space to Shaymin V-Stars when we're already playing the best V-Star with Arceus?
Yeah, I guess that's true. One thing about Samurott does seem to have developed a little bit of a Samurott fan club. I've been seeing like a lot of like people who
Samurott
are like
devoted. Stands out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are devoted to Samurott, and they're working hard on their lists. And that's cool to see. I worked a lot on Samurott early on in the format, and I got it to a point where I was like, okay, it's consistent, it's decent. You can't keep up with the prize trade consistently against the other top decks. Lilligant is so frustrating to me personally because it hits for 260 damage, so you're almost forced to play with Inteleon to get quick shooting. But then your ability lets you search for 5 grass Pokemon, and you're playing Inteleon in your deck. It feels so bad. It's such a frustrating card.
You just
gotta
apple drop, bro. You gotta get the Flapple in there.
Maybe that's the answer. Gardenia, though, I think is still a very super powerful card that definitely has a lot of untapped potential. Like, we just gotta kind of like, I think maybe people are a little bit too caught up with grass ideas. I haven't found anything yet personally, but remember, you can attach those energy literally anywhere. It does not have to be to a grass Pokemon. I haven't found the key yet, but I think there's possible. There has to be something out there with like a decent colorless attack that you can combo with, maybe. If not,
there's got to be a Weldeo of this format, right?
Yeah, where is the Gardenio?
Gardenio?
Gardio? It's out there. We'll find it. Maybe we need a set. We might have to wait for a set or two as well. Like some of these cards, which is like one of the really cool things, like all these cards, like we see a lot of potential in them. And sometimes you have to wait for like an extra set or two, and then all of a sudden, you know, it'll have its moment. So
yeah, like Magma Basin, don't sleep on it. Just wait.
Speaking of Magma Basin, so in the finals of my 1K, I went up against Arceus Charizard. Anyone who's hit Flavio in the online tournaments, I played against him, living legend. Always making top 8 in tournaments always making top 8 in the tournaments with the Charizard Arceus consistently. They're there. Heatran, that thing is scary with Magma Basin. That thing is, you hit it, you put one thing on it, and then next turn is hitting for 280 damage. Like, Choice Belt, that one KO is a Mew VMAX. That's two turns. You go first, and you can't even respond to the Heatran before it's ready to go. Yeah, so the Heatran is scary. That thing is actually pretty absurd. I didn't really, like, I thought about it, obviously, when it was coming out. Like, okay, with Magma Basin, all right, you build, but that's too slow, right? You got to get them out in one turn. But who wants to go chase a one-prize Pokemon on your opponent's bench for their turn, you know? And then if you don't, though, he's coming out swinging. So Heatran, that thing is scary. That thing is scary. I don't know if there's something there with the Magma Basin to just, like, have that even. I was, like, thinking, maybe what if you just don't even play the Charizard? And you just play Arceus with Fire Energy, Heatran, and Magma Basin. I don't know where else you go from there, but that'd be a start. But yeah, Heatran, that thing is scary for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. The Heatran is obviously strong if you can get the damage on it. But my problem becomes that not a great way to put damage on it in one turn. It's like you can get the two damage counters on it in one turn. But then after that, it's not quite as powerful. So I don't know. I honestly think that Heatran has a lot of potential. I agree with you for sure. That thing can hit super hard, but I don't even know if that card specifically, the best way to play it would even be with Magma Basin. I saw someone posting something with Old Cemetery online with like the Cherrim that accelerates energies. I think there's maybe some potential with that. Cause listen, man, you're laughing, but
Cherrim can't accelerate. I've been through this with someone. Cherrim can't.
It can't go on to the rule box. You're right. JK.
I've been here before with someone.
Okay, Old Cemetery, Gardenia's Vigor. Okay, there's your two colorless attacker that you're looking for with the Gardenia.
There we go. Only drawing two cards for the turn, but who knows? It might just be just enough.
Gardenran, bro. Let's make it happen. All right. Heatdenia. Well, speaking of the Radiant Pokemon. Speaking of the Radiant Pokemon, the Radiant Heatran. I didn't even put this one on the list of...
on there. It's...
Okay. Okay. Of the three, rank the three of which of the new Radiant Pokemon will be the highest placing this weekend. Is it going to be the Heatran? Is it going to be the Hawlucha, which is probably going to exclusively almost be an Ice Rider? Could also see it in some like Wurmadam deck, something like that, some Zoroark box. Or will it be the Greninja, of course, which would probably be the safe choice since it is such a busted card and goes very well with the new best deck or the new top deck, whatever. Rank them 1 to 3, Azul. Best finishing, worst finishing.
So Greninja is the best out of them for sure.
But best finishing though.
I could see it being Hawlucha if you come up with a deck that like you need the Hawlucha to beat Mew, but you beat everything else. I want it to be Heatran, but I think you gotta almost give it to. All right, I'm gonna go with Hawlucha, and then Greninja. I mean, I'm going to go with Heatran. I'm going to go Heatran, Greninja, Hawlucha.
You think that Heatran is going to do... Wait, you're doing Heatran number one?
Yeah, someone's got it. Someone's got the Heatran twice.
Shot that Radiant Heatran is going to be the best placing Radiant Pokemon, Azul?
I don't know. Maybe Flavio's making their way over to the Australian regional right now. No, but... it was so good. Like, when I played against him in the finals, like, it was such... So much, it was such a threat on the board. It was actually pretty crazy. I didn't expect it. But the moment you bench it and Magma Base into it, and it's not even so much that it can hit you for 280 next turn and that you could boss it. Like, you having to go out of your way to boss that is so bad.
Yes.
Up against an Arceus deck. For sure. All of a sudden it's two prize. You have to KO four Pokemon. You're forcing yourself to KO four Pokemon. It's like really bad to go KO that Heatran. Like, that's what surprised me the most. Like, I didn't think about that when I was thinking about the card initially. I was like, yeah. Magma Basin get two damage on that in one turn, so what, your opponent just boss KOs it? Like, you didn't do anything with it, but your opponent boss KO'd it, you know? So, I don't know. Yeah, maybe someone... Yeah, I'm gonna give it to Heatran. I'm hoping that someone over in Australia cracked the Heatran and has it in a broken deck with it, whether it just be with Magma Basin or something like the Cemetery Gardenia combo. they made it work because it's a big threat. That thing is scary for sure. And then yeah, Greninja is too good to not put at number two. Hawlucha, I could see Hawlucha doing it. Someone coming up with a deck where, you know, like the Ice Rider, where you play the Hawlucha, you're beating everything else, you play the Hawlucha for the Mew, you win the tournament. Yeah, so they're all pretty good.
Yeah, I thought I was gonna be having a spicy take when I picked Hawlucha to be the top finishing Radiant Pokemon. I think it'll probably be Hawlucha, then Greninja, and then I wasn't even going to rank Heatran. Hey, Heatran's fine, but, you know, I'm being a little bit more realistic, I think. That Hawlucha... I think that... So the thing about this is I think that Mew is going to go pretty deep and definitely be in top four, probably in the finals, And Mew is not going to be playing any of the Radiant Pokemon. So what is Mew going to be playing against becomes the question. Is it going to be Palkia or is it going to be something like the Ice Rider? And I actually think that if there's a lot of Palkia, if there is a lot of Arceus, that Ice Rider is probably going to have a pretty solid showing. And we actually saw this at the Full Grip Games tournament where Ice Rider was able to get second place because there was so much of the V-Star Pokemon. And it can one-hit KO the V-Stars, and the V-Stars just cannot get there on the Ice Rider. So that's my thoughts. I think that we'll see a Hawlucha doing a little bit better than Greninja, though Greninja is definitely the best of the three for sure. But I still I thought I was gonna have the hot take here, but I think that Hawlucha will be a better finishing Radiant Pokemon than Greninja. So one last thing before we close out the show, our current reigning world champion, you mentioned this a little bit earlier in the cast, did put out a tier list of his opinion on the Melbourne Regionals coming up, the best decks for the tournament, and kind of where he thought everything was. So I'm going to read off the tier list, and kind of Azul and I, to close out the show, will give our thoughts and opinions on how we would maybe move things around, or what we agree with, what we disagree with, all of those things. So let me just, I guess maybe I should just read it through one time for the audio listeners, and then we can look at it a little more in depth. I do have it pulled up on the screen for anyone watching on YouTube. So in S tier, we got two decks, the Palkia V-Star with Inteleon and Mew VMAX. Pretty safe choices, I would say, in S tier for this event. Definitely the Mew. Palkia yet to be totally proven, but I think everyone is kind of on board that this card is very good. And then we've got tier one, the Arceus Inteleon, and then Rapid Strike Urshifu VMAX. Tier two, Ice Rider Inteleon, Hisuian Samurott, Arceus Tapu Koko, Darkrai V-Star, and then the Regigigas yet. In the not yet tier, which Azul mentioned, we've got Dialga V-Star with the Diancie. And then in Amoeba tier, we have Blissey with Miltank and Arceus Duraludon. And I do believe Amoeba tier is not a good place to be in Henry's mind. So this is our World Champions ratings, Azul. His tier list going into this event. What are your thoughts?
I mean, tier one makes sense, or tier S tier, whatever. I don't like S tiers in tier lists usually because I feel like that should just be tier one. But yeah, the S tier in Henry's list is the Mew and the Palkia. Makes sense to me. I think Arceus Inteleon, if it had like a slightly better Palkia matchup, would be joining them. The Urshifu, the Arceus, it makes sense. And I mean, they're just, I think Urshifu is a lot better. We haven't seen it a whole ton, but I think it is still just really, really good. Your Palkia is definitely, like, if you compare that matchup to your kind of Arceus Inteleon preview, like, Palkia is a lot better against Urshifu than any Arceus deck I think ever was. Like, the Greninja puts on a lot of pressure. The fact that Palkia can potentially one-hit KO your Urshifu if you fill your bench and you want to fill your bench is, like, a lot of pressure. So,
My problem with Urshifu right now is that a lot of decks are going to be playing Manaphy. Pretty much all the Palkias are going to be playing Manaphy. And it's not even for Urshifu. It's for the Radiant Greninja is that the reason everyone's going to be packing the Manaphy. So I think just that being included in a lot of decks is going to hurt Urshifu. I don't know that a lot of Arceus decks will play Dunsparce. Probably some still will be. I don't know that. Let me clarify. I don't think that Arceus decks necessarily should be playing Dunsparce this weekend. I think if I was playing Arceus, I probably wouldn't play if I was playing Arceus, I probably wouldn't play Dunsparce this weekend. I think I got a little tripped up on my words there, but I think there will just be a little bit less Arceus at this tournament than the previous ones. It'll be a lot more Mew, probably a decent amount of Palkia. So I don't think that Urshifu is quite deserving of a tier one spot for this event. I think maybe as the meta shapes up a little more, we could see that change. But in my opinion, Urshifu's probably not quite there for tier one just yet.
I don't know. A lot of the other decks like aren't playing this stuff like Manaphy. All the Arceus B barrels and stuff we're talking about, none of the ones like, and it's really hard to want to play Manaphy in those decks because it doesn't do anything against Greninja. So like, I don't know, Urshifu's got a lot of opportunity to do like really well in this format, I think, in general. I mean, Mew is still there. And like, I think one of the cards that Urshifu's most scared of is actually Roxanne, because you're a pretty big combo deck. Marnie was already like something that was annoying to deal with. Roxanne becomes that much harder to deal with. Of course, you can set up some really like tricky yoga loop plays where you don't go down to three prize cards until you've basically won the game. So If you can find those lines of play to kind of take in matchups to avoid the Roxanne play, then that's definitely something to start working on if you're a diehard Urshifu player. And like I said, with the rest of the list, I definitely agree with Henry on the Olga, like the not yet. Like I want that deck to be really good. It's really powerful, and maybe we're just waiting for someone to crack the list. And then I don't know what the last tier is. Was it Amiibo tier? Is that what you said it was?
Amiibo
tier. What does that even mean?
Like an amoeba from like a cell, I guess. I don't know.
What if I have no idea, but it's Arceus Duraludon.
You don't know what an amoeba is?
Is that no, what is an amoeba?
An amoeba, often called an amoeboid, is a type of cell or unicellular organism which has the ability to alter its shape. You know what an amoeba is?
This sounds familiar. I just don't remember the name.
Freaking homeschool. That's what it is, guys. That's what it is. This homeschooler.
The name is just like
didn't take biology.
Dude, the amount of like stuff I remember from my schooling is like basically zero. Like what I said to someone one time is like you don't need to know calculus to do X-ball math.
20 plus 20. I just do 2 plus 2 plus 2 and then add a zero at the end of my math. That's how I add it up.
So I think Blizzard Miltank is actually like, if you've played against it, when you play it, it doesn't feel like you're doing anything. But on the other side of it, it's just so hard to deal with when they're constantly switching between a Blissey with a million energy and then the Miltank. So that deck, I haven't played a ton with it. A little bit I have played though. It's just a really good, it feels solid.
Yeah, it's definitely not bad. I think that the idea behind the idea behind amoeba tier is like a single cell organism is what's playing it. You know, it's like, or that's all you need to play it. Maybe something like the, you know, a Turbo Dark, right, of the past.
Yeah.
I think that's what he's going for there. Sorry, I had to key in on that, but I'm a little surprised that he has Samurott all the way up in tier two.
Yeah, me too. That Samurott has felt it like can win convincingly, and it can like, you know, get ahead in the prize trade and maintain it. But it just feels, the more I've played it, like at first I was like, okay, we should get the good list for it, and that's what I was working on. How do we get the good list for it? Because I think it'll be good once you get that list. But the more I played it, and the better the list got, it still felt like you were always like. And now I was at least doing the stuff I want to do consistently, but I was still struggling to actually win games consistently. Like I was doing what I want to do consistently. But I felt like there were so many opportunities for my opponent to just like, you know, like they misplay and they don't take advantage of the scenario, stuff like that. And it was just like, yeah, this deck just feels like it can't quite keep up. But it's good against Arceus. The Arceus matchup felt pretty good. So it's got that going for it, I guess.
And then Regigigas in tier two is probably the last thing to mention here. I do think that's probably the best place for it. It's like a fine deck, but not amazing. It'll beat the top decks sometimes, but it'll lose to him a decent amount of the time.
Yeah, it's just kind of inconsistent as well. People are comparing it to like Malamar, which I think is a little bit disrespectful to Malamar, because Malamar wasn't that inconsistent. But I think it fits more in the Greninja tier of things. That was an inconsistent deck. I think Gigas is maybe the new Greninja of the format. I think that's reasonable.
I think Gigas is definitely way more consistent than Greninja, but maybe a topic for another time. All right, Azul. I think that is going to do it for the cast this week. Thank you to everyone at home for listening. Thanks for watching here on the YouTube channel, if you are watching on YouTube. And if you're listening at home, please be sure to give us a rating on your favorite podcasting platform. It only takes a few seconds, and it is such a quick and easy way to show your support. It really does mean a lot. And also be sure to subscribe if you are watching on YouTube, listening on YouTube, whatever it may be. We are currently at 1,995 subscribers. So 5 subs away from the 2K mark on just our 13th episode, which I count as an absolute win. Azul, I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thanks for all the support, guys. Yeah, click the subscribe button. So you're always aware when the new episode goes live on the YouTube. Make sure you comment and like as well. Let us know how you did in the Guess the Flavor Text. How many lifelines did you need before you guessed Marshadow? Or did you actually end up not getting it this week. Did you not get it this
did
week?
You what go
do you
with
think
Mimikyu
it was?
Like, I was a little dead.
Did you go with Mimikyu? I mean, this is that's a pretty good. I think that was a pretty good.
It was. It was. Yeah. Whenever you said Mimikyu after I read it to you, I was like, oh, he's not going to get it. But you talked through it and you worked through it. Yeah. You kept saying the word shadow multiple times. And I was like, if he misses it now, like, there's just no help for this kid. But
yeah,
you got it.
Was
it.
Close.
Got and it. Then and, also be sure to check out all the socials for myself and Azul, as well as the cast. You can follow Azul yep. on Twitter at Azul_GG. Follow myself at TrainerChip, or follow the podcast at Uncommon_Energy. And thanks as always for the continued support. Best of luck to anyone playing in tournaments this weekend. Next week, we'll be breaking down the results from Melbourne. We'll be looking ahead to the Milwaukee Regionals. It's going to be a busy couple of weeks after this one, as yeah. well, for sure. We got Milwaukee Regionals and then NAIC just the week after that. Going to sneak up on us without a doubt. So,
yeah, super, super busy. And we're unfortunately a day late this week, but we'll see you guys next Tuesday at 7 a.m. Eastern, and we'll get back on track. So thanks for watching and listening, and catch you all next week.
Peace.